I'm Michael Slate.
Michael Slate.
On today's show, we're going to be talking about terrorism, Palestine,
hatred.
I wanted to talk with you,
America. President Bush.
Today's program,
we all jumped out into like from the soldiers and
New generations of suicide bombers that will never stop or truly understand, even though America said, "Give me liberty or give me death."
Slate.
America said, "Give me liberty or give me death."
Okay, welcome to Beneath the Surface. I'm Michael Slate, and today we're going to have a very special edition of the show. We're going to be talking with Eva Georgia about her mission, about her view, about her role at the station, what's been accomplished, what she's looking forward to in the future, and many other questions. And before we do that, though, we're going to have news headlines from Trevor David.
Thank you, Michael. Here are some stories that we're working on for your 6:30 KPFK Evening News broadcast. Los Angeles Police Chief William Bratton is asking the federal government for more resources to help the fight on violent street gangs here in L.A. Also, California has until January 1st next year to come up with a plan to cut back on water consumption. As well as that, we have a story on the British troops who are preparing for deployment to the Gulf in anticipation of conflict with Iraq. But some of those troops are worried that they might experience illnesses similar to Gulf War syndrome. We'll have those stories for you and some more at 6:30. Now back to Michael Slate with Eva Georgia.
Okay, thanks.
Stay tuned for some more Michael Slate on KPFK. We'll be right back.
Okay, 6 months ago, Eva Georgia walked into KPFK. And welcome tonight.
Michael, thank you. Sure. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to be on your show tonight.
Yeah. Well, I think it's actually really important. And I wanted to just say something about this because I think it's it is kind of a special programming. And I think it's, you know, we should just say straight up that one of the things that we wanted to do with this, that I wanted to do with this, and I did kind of approach you about doing this.
For a couple of months. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. Because I feel that there's been a tremendous, being someone who's been around KPFK in particular since 92 off and on, you know, since I first came out to LA, I've seen tremendous changes since you've come here. And I thought that actually one of the things that we haven't gotten a chance to hear enough is what's behind those changes. What's your vision? What, you know, this kind of stuff. And I thought it was really important that you be able to do this in a way where you can just kick back, we can just talk. And we've talked in the past about, you know, similar questions. You can just kick back, talk, put out your vision, you know, just let people know who you are and what you're trying to do. And that's, I think that's really important today. And especially in the situation where this station has a tremendous role to play in the world. So, having said that.
That's a whole mouthful. But I'll try.
Well, okay. Well, let's get into this. So, you've been here 6 months. And the first thing, as I asked you once before, what got into you? You walked through the door, and what made you want to come to KPFK?
My passion for what I believe in, my love for the airwaves. You know, the mission of Pacifica, to have the opportunity to broadcast an alternative voice and to be able to reflect through our programming our beliefs, is not something that you can do in the mainstream media. So mostly it was Pacifica's mission and the work they've done here during the Second World War, as an anti-war movement when Lou Hill started the first community radio station. For me, myself, I started a community radio station in Cape Town because I believed in giving a voice to the voices. I believe giving a voice to the people that has been disenfranchised, did not historically have a voice. And I wanted an opportunity to give a voice to those that wouldn't otherwise have a voice. And KPFK gives me that opportunity.
Well, it's kind of interesting, too, because when you talk about starting a radio station in Cape Town, you know, I remember asking you once, you didn't just wake up one day and decide you wanted to do radio. And you kind of corrected me and said, yes, I did.
I did.
And, well, why don't we talk about that a little bit? Because it was a, you know, it's a different situation in South Africa then and, you know, what you're doing now. But why don't you tell people about that?
Yeah, I did. I did wake up in 1993 and decided I was going to start a radio station. I started out in media, you know, from a young age in school. I started writing for newspapers and started school newspapers because the media was controlled by the government, by the anti-apartheid government at that time. So there was no freedom in the media. And the chances of me as a black woman, one, as a woman, and two, being black, there wasn't the opportunity for me to get into broadcasting. I remember I used to run home from school because I was so fascinated by, you know, the radio dramas and serials. And it was a world that just opened up something that wasn't necessarily available to you. And I fell in love with radio and always felt that I could do this, you know. And I tried to get into broadcasting in South Africa, but as I said, you know, I had things that wasn't working for me. And one morning, got up and decided, I'm going to start my own radio station. That's really how it started in 1993, and did exactly that. I spent a lot of time in Germany, you know, studying and learning about community radio stations, spent a lot of time at different colleges and institutions in South Africa to be trained. So I spent 2 years being trained on every area of radio, so I can do from producing to, you know, the nitty-gritty to management. And that was it. You know, it's like everything else in my life. Once I set a goal for myself, I go for it. Mm-hmm. And this to me was so important because after the abolishment of apartheid in South Africa, I knew that I could do something that was going to be so unique, so special. And I spent an entire year going to the community trying to find out what it is they wanted to hear on the air. You know, going house to house, going from school to school, factory to factory, working with the unions, working with religious organizations, sports organizations, civic organizations, everybody, to be able to broadcast programming that they believe was important and address social and political issues like we do now, here today at KPFK. That was important for me, that I was able to take a stand for my beliefs and give a voice to the community. So that's pretty much.
But it also there had to be something too when you look at, I mean, I had been to South Africa when it was the apartheid system, and I know that the kinds of things that were put out there, the kind of distorted, warped news that people got, the fact that, you know, television didn't even exist in South
Africa until 1976.
Right, yeah, and then what was there was, I mean, I remember going sitting in Johannesburg one night and looking at Boer TV, and it was like this crazy mix of sort of Merv Griffin and Las Vegas. You know, it was like, what is going on? And it was very sanitized stories, and it was, you know,
absolutely.
No,
I mean, when the first time I traveled to London or to Europe, I was 16. And I was in high school, decided I wanted to go overseas, raised money with a group of 10 of us. And we went to Europe. And what I saw, the news coverage about South Africa was very different from the news that we were getting in South Africa. It was completely polarized. It was a voice for the government. And it excluded anything that I wrote as a journalist, you know, it was censored. And so I was very frustrated. Most of my life I spent my time as an investigative reporter into government and police corruption and any kind of social injustice I would address at a very high price in the end. But I just think, you know, it's not always. I think you can ask the question to anyone today, how much of what you do in your everyday life is what you love, is what you are passionate about. I love what I do. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love what I do. And I don't think a lot of us get that opportunity to do it.
Mm-hmm. And when you say you love what you do, a lot of, especially it being here, a lot of it does have to do with, you know, I mean, you were, well, let's talk, I guess, actually, first what we'll talk about is a little bit about, you know, what in particular, let's revisit the mission again. What in particular about the KPFK, about the Pacifica mission, makes you get up every morning and love what you do?
I think there's a number of things to, you know, address the conflicts between nations, like we do now with the anti-war movement, taking a stand against, we are the only medium that's taking a stand against the war. So I think that's a crucial point. Being able to diversify the air, through that process of addressing conflicts between nations, to be able to broadcast alternative news and public affairs that you're not going to hear anywhere else. We look at the kind of news that we cover from Latin America to Africa to the Middle East. And that is not, you know, the mainstream media inundates you with pretty much a voice for the government, a voice for the corporations. And yeah, we can do it differently. We can give you an alternative view. The same thing with the type of music that we broadcast. We do world music. We do music that's not in the mainstream. And I think that's the things that wakes me up, that I have the ability to do something, one that I believe in. But the mission of Pacifica, I think to me, is very clear, that we can create understanding between nations through what we broadcast on the air. That's a very powerful statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, and it's also a very challenging job and mission, you know, in terms of coming in to do that. And one of the things I wanted to ask you is, I want to talk about all the points that you raised. I want to talk about the diversity point. I want to talk about a lot of the things that you've done here. But I also want to ask you, when you came in, I kept trying to think of like some kind of, okay, this would be a great metaphor for how when Eva walked through the door. And I kept thinking, well, yeah, it's you walked into a situation, it wasn't easy. No, that's not good enough. It was like trying to put together a broken eggshell. And then I realized that that's not it, because that's a little bit easier than what you had to do. And I think, because you had, in a certain sense, it wasn't that the eggshell was broken. You had to get a new egg, you know, from what's happening.
Pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. So why don't we talk about that? What did it, like, for instance, that required of you a certain ability to actually come in and lead and facilitate in doing that process. What is your view of actually being able to lead, to that, the kind of leadership that's required to do that? What's your view of that?
I think when you ask me about leadership, I think the best way for me to answer is probably to say what leadership is not for me. Or what's important in leadership is having a vision, is being able to manage where people know that you care, that you manage with compassion. I also think it's important. You know, one of the fundamental principles of most human beings is that we need recognition for what we do, for who we are. And I think as a leader, it's important to know that. It's important to manage that. I also think that with leadership comes power. Power and a lot of times control. And the question is, how do you use that power so that you don't create division, but you create unity? So I think a lot of it is being a visionary, being able to lay out your goals and plans for the future, and bringing people on board and selling what you believe in so that others would, you know, would want to go that route. And leadership does not, to me, mean not being challenged. In fact, I love being challenged, whether it's by my staff or the volunteers or the community. I think to foster in a healthy, creative environment where people feel that they have a voice, they can express an opinion, whether that is opinion is an opposing view to mine or not. And I like to cultivate that kind of environment. I think it's important. Leadership is also, you know, sometimes when we lead, it's difficult to delegate. But
what? Really?
Delegation is a key part of leadership. Also, you know, creating structures where you can create a level of democracy. Now, I always say democracy borders on chaos. Because when you talk about the democracy, everybody believes, or sometimes people believe, we all have to be part of making a decision. And you can't always do that. But I think it's important that we create structures such as the collectives, that we create training programs, that we do have individual staff and development programs for people so that we can nurture people. Management is about managing people and caring about people, you know. And that, particularly when you come, managing as an activist is even more challenging because we are so filled with passion for what we believe in. It's very different from just ordinary management. So that becomes really challenging. And I think the vision and the goals have to or should encapsulate all of what we believe in. And a lot of the times you know, as a leader, I am torn in many different directions because everybody wants what they want. Everybody has their own needs. When I came in here, I can tell you I was inundated, and I still am inundated with requests from the Latino community, from the Black community, from the Asian community, from everybody that didn't have a voice. I was literally speaking, becoming that figure that would bring change to these communities and have tried to do so and will continue to do so. But by no means is this, it's never easy, but I love the challenge. And I think it's not just managing as a team, but manage by collective, you know. And being able to, as I say, foster people's creativity and make them come alive. Leadership is not just about team building, but about developing everybody else to be leaders. It's like this morning I spoke to one of my staff members and I said, you know what, it's great if you could start a training program, but my recommendation would be to train people so that they become the trainers and not the trainees. Mm-hmm. To lead so that you develop other leaders and not employees.
Now, how do you think that you've been able to do that here? Because there actually has been a lot of discussion and dissent around, you know, and that's not secret. You know, there's been a lot of discussion and dissent around how you've been able to actually lead the staff and lead the people in changing this. How do you think that?
I think firstly that I haven't had enough opportunity to lead because there's been so much political conflict. All of the time, that most of the time what I've been doing is really managing day-to-day crisis, different things. It's just easing up right now. You know, there's such a great sense in the station these days where people are starting to trust that they can come and say, I don't quite agree with what you say or what you do. But when you talk about how I've changed things or how I do things, I think a lot of it is to be able to bring an idea forward or talk to the producers or whoever and say, you know, what interests me is if people come forward, whether it's producers or hosts or whoever, and they say, this is what I want to do. This is my idea about how I think we should cover Iraq or what I think should happen in the news. My first response is, you put a proposal together and we'll brainstorm it. You know, this whole project about that we're doing tomorrow, I'm very excited about it. You know, our listeners are going to hear some incredible programming.
The project, which is?
Yes, the 18-hour radiothon on poverty in Los Angeles. We're starting tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. until midnight. And this was a proposal that I had approved from Jay Levin with Share LA, but the producers took it on. You know, I asked them, I pushed it over to them, and they have put this entire day of programming together. And many other things. You've heard some incredible production on KPFK from the Chicano Moratorium to, there's just so much, the 9/11 programming. They've done the producers has also done the youth training program and several others. And these come out of ideas that they bring forward. And work on it because people have to have the freedom to come in and explore and experience and say, this is what I would like to do, and then work on it. And more, they are taking the leadership in doing things and coming in with amazing ideas about what are we going to broadcast for Peace Watch. Mm-hmm. I have been, over the last, you know, couple of months, been totally hands-off on Peace Watch. They'll come, we'll brainstorm ideas. And, you know, we have a weekly production meeting that I started with all of the producers get together. And what we do in that meeting on a weekly basis is brainstorm ideas for programming, brainstorm how we want to change the airways, how we can make it more effective, how we can just take the sound and make it more professional.
Yeah, I want to remind our listeners that this is KPFK 90.7 FM, I'm Michael Slate, and today I'm talking with Eva Georgia, the general manager of KPFK, and we're kind of just chatting about her vision and what's going on at the station. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you actually about around this leadership question, too, was actually when you said it's, you know, that a big part of leadership is delegating responsibility to people, and you got into some of that. Have there been, what's been the hardest thing that you found? Have there been points where you felt like you fell down or that you had a hard time with it?
I think, yeah. I think one of the things that impacted me or impacts me as a leader is not being able to roll out my vision, not being able to say, this is it. This is the short-term and long-term plan. Not having managers there. I'm supposed to have a management team of six. I've been working with one other manager all of these months, too. We're now getting managers on board. But I also think not being able to roll out my vision and plans for the station is one of the things that I definitely needed to do, trying to do now. And I think coming in, and not quite understanding the level of politics and how politics within the KPFK listener groups, activists, plays into particularly, say, for instance, programming changes. Or what, you know, me making programming changes to create more diversity on the air, how deeply that's rooted into the fear of some communities that they would now lose their voice to the airwaves.
Let's talk about that a little, because diversity, I know, is one of the points that you've made a lot. You've made a lot around, you know, a lot of basically motion around. You've also told me that that's one of the most important things to you in terms of your job here at Pacifica and what you see as your mission, as you're part of implementing and interpreting the mission statement of Pacifica. A lot of that has to do with diversity. So why don't we talk about what you actually see as diversity?
I think there's different things. One, diversifying the airwaves with people of color. Two, being able to address the issues of people of different cultures, different ethnic backgrounds. I also think that it's important, you know, when we talk about the language issue, that's a very sensitive thing. But when you look back in over, you know, if you look back in history, you'll see that a lot of the minority groups, and I hate the word minority, so I'm just going to say people of color, that's been oppressed throughout the world, one of the things the oppressor has always done is to take away people's right to speak in their own language. And to a certain degree, Pacifica has done that. We, for whatever reason, and sometimes justifiably so. But I think, why do this, Los Angeles specifically, is the melting pot of the world. It's rich with culture and diversity. It's rich with immigrants coming from all over the world. And why should we force people to broadcast in a language that is not their own? Why are we trying to conform people to a Western world or a Western culture? That's not what they are about. I think that diversity or the issue of different cultures, different languages could be used to as our strength and not necessarily as a division, not necessarily as a weakness. If we talk about creating understanding between nations, how are we going to do it? We can do it through culture. We can do it through music. We can do it through broadcasting in different languages or doing interlingual languages. We cross the bridge or we build bridges between different communities by creating understanding about each other's cultures, about each other's ways of life, making us sensitive to what people go through in their culture, what are the challenges they face. And I think that, to me, is a big part of diversity. The other thing that relates to diversity is to be able to train specifically young people. My focus would be on training more young people and giving young people a voice on KPFK, because that's the future.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this, about your, you know, the youth, diversity and as it relates to youth. Let's talk a little bit about that and what it's meant and what, you know, you said that's the future, but it's also, there's been some specific decisions that you made, because I think it's important. You know, I know everybody's probably sitting out there saying, come on, ask her the hard questions, you know?
Yeah, Michael asked me the hard questions.
Well, the point is what I'm trying to get at here is I think more than the hard questions, I think really it's a question of, I want you to tell what you're doing, what you think, you know? I mean, it's not, you know, you have a chance to answer the hard questions all the time. You know, you do. And I think you get confronted with them all the time.
I guess the question is, Michael, what is the hard question?
Right, exactly. It's the hard question actually putting out your vision and actually being able to explain what it is to people and how you're going to implement it. Whereas the hard question jacking you up. And yeah. I think actually the hard question is, what's your vision and how are you going to implement it? And let's talk about youth in particular. How are you going to do this with youth?
I think going out there, doing a huge outreach program at schools, at colleges, universities, and any place where we can find youth and hear what they want to do. Mm-hmm. I think it's easy for me to sit here and say, this is how I'm going to diversify the airwaves. Same thing. I have to talk to the communities of color. We got to go out there and do outreach the same with youth. I got to go out there. My view of what youth should be doing on the air, I can tell you, would be very differently one from their own view. And I think one is the outreach mechanism that has to happen. And the other thing is for us to create training and development programs for young people and to make the station accessible. If people can't come to a station that's based in North Hollywood, someone from Watts is not going to be able necessarily to come to North Hollywood for training. But we could start training programs in Watts or East LA or wherever, where there's a need. And you know, there's not a lot of role models in this country. I'm sorry to say that, but that's the truth.
I have no not for me. I mean,
you know, and so you have to give young people something to believe in. Let them know that this radio is accessible to them. There's so much talent in Los Angeles. That talent should be on our airwaves, you know, and they should be able to express themselves. I get a lot of complaints about some of the youth programs that's on in the middle of the night because people don't want them. People want them to sound a particular way. Well, you know what? These are young people. We should let them sound like young people and not like smooth professional voices. I think it's important to have that aspect where we do have a professional sound. But I also think that part of diversity and part of youth is to allow us to be who we are. Mm-hmm. And to create, I think part of the big picture is bringing about change. When you bring change in any organization, sometimes there's a lot of resistance. There's people that's going to watch and see what you do. And then there's people that's usually the minority that's going to agree with what you do. And so the vision is, how do we bring about change so that my vision, even though some of the things you might not agree with, that you would think it's the best interest of the station, because the vision is not in the interest of one specific group or one specific ethnic group or one broadcasting one specific language, but it's what's overall in the best interest of the station.
Mm-hmm. We're going to, actually, at this point, I think we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back to talk with Eva Georgia more about her vision and about KPFK.
Hello, I'm Jerry Quickly, and this is KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles. We're proud to present Help Fight Holiday Hunger, co-sponsored by the Los Angeles Regional Food Bank. Please make a donation by bringing food items to the KPFK studios at 3729 Cahuenga Boulevard West in North Hollywood from December 14th through December 31st. We need canned goods, packaged items, and drinks in non-breakable containers. Also, personal items such as soap, toothbrushes, and tissues. For more information and a complete list of items to donate, please call KPFK at 818-985-2711 and punch in O for operator. And remember to tune in for KPFK's Poverty Radiothon Wednesday, December 18th from 6 a.m. to midnight.
Join me, Sarah Elton Towie, and American Muslims who are taking a bold stance for freedom and security at the Muslim Public Affairs Council Annual Convention, taking place on December 21st and 22nd at the Long Beach Convention Center. I'll be talking about the one-dimensional image the mainstream media is giving of Islam, American Muslims, war, and national security. Other guests include Jamel Bedoui, Suleiman Yang, Art Torres, Ramona Ripston, and Democracy Now!'s very own Amy Goodman. Topics to be discussed include the American Muslim identity, threats to American democracy, freedom and civil liberties, and global and national security. KPFK is a co-sponsor of this special two-day event that takes place on December 21st and 22nd at the Long Beach Convention Center. For more information, please call 213-383-3443.
And now back to Michael Slate on KPFK.
All right, welcome back. We're talking with Eva Georgia today about her vision of the station, of Pacifica, of what's been going on here. Now, you talked a lot about, in terms of trying to implement your vision, in terms of trying to provide leadership to rebuild this station, and as part of actually rebuilding the network, And you've had political problems. What are the some of the political problems that you've actually, you know, in terms of what are the questions that you've run up against? You know, when you say like, you know, you've had, okay, you wanted to do interlingual programming or bilingual programming. What are some of the questions that you've come up with, or the youth?
You know, resistance to change, resistance to bring new voices to the airwaves, resistance to reducing programmers that's been on airtime for programmers that's been on the air for a long time. That's part of it. But I think at the core is the fear of coming in, changing a station, making major programming changes when people aren't sure where they're going.
Well, you know, that's true. On the other hand, there's also, I mean, frankly, a lot of the stuff that you did, you know, it needed to be shook up. Frank, quite honestly, I think it did. And what I'd ask you is, how do you see dealing with these people? You know, because people, you know, it's got to. I mean, you come in the morning and you're pulling into the parking lot, and you know that when you walk through the door, there's going to be a lot of people there. And you've been, you know, I mean, you have, you know, what you were saying, you were trained in South Africa and Germany, and
I also came for training in the United States in 1995. Yeah. In fact, I was at KPFA in Berkeley, and also studied extensively the community radio models of Sweden, Canada, different models around the world.
So. Right. So you have this, you have all this experience and all this training, and yet you walk into here, and it is true. I've seen it in the short time that I've been here. You know, it's like if you put your left foot out, you know, there's like 1,000 people going to trip on it, walk on it, whatever. If you pull it back and put your right foot out, there's 1,000 people on that side. And I've marveled at actually what, and I think maybe if you could talk to that a little bit about how you've actually dealt with that, or what you think needs to be done to deal with that, your vision of how to, you know, what's it mean to be a leader in that kind of situation, you know?
I think in an organization such as Pacifica, you're always going to have that kind of situation. And I think it's, again, it comes back to laying out a specific vision with specific goals and what I want to reach with the station, whether it's news, you know, I'd like to see that we have coverage from Latin America to Africa to the Middle East in our news and different things. But I think it's, one, finding out what it is the community wants and then acting on it. And sometimes you're going to, most of the times when you make programming changes or any other changes for that matter at the station, there's going to be support and there's going to be opposition.
Well, let's talk about some of the programming changes. For instance, one thing that I found very interesting, and I know tripped up a lot of people's Friday nights, and me being a little
okay,
bit...
I know where he goes, well, where he's going.
Well, I mean, there's a, you know, look, the Grateful Dead had have a very big audience. But there's also Fidel and Divine Forces Radio, which also has a very big and very important audience.
Yeah.
And, you know, frankly, that was a decision that you made that you know, there had to be some fallout around that. What was the...
There was a lot. I was told that if I touched the Grateful Dead, which was a four-hour music show, it was like stepping into, a landmine. But so is every other programming change that I make. It's like stepping into a landmine, but I'm willing to make it because I do believe it's in the best interest of diversifying the airwaves on all different levels. When I made that change, it was specifically because I had a proposal and a request from the group of Divine Forces to put them back in their regular time slot. And I think as a radio station that I see mostly as a talk radio station, having a four-hour music show, to me, just didn't make sense. I just thought, you know, and then you have one music show that's 4 hours, The Grateful Dead. Hopefully those listeners will, you know, we
They're
use The Grateful Dead as a response. But I think the host was great about dealing with that and The Grateful Dead. But you have The Grateful Dead against a Latino music show that's 1 hour. And so how do you justify that? You just can't.
Well, and even more, I mean, actually, Divine Forces is actually a hip-hop radio.
It's a hip-hop show. It's a show that caters to youth, but it's also a show that is very politically conscious. And through that politically conscious message, you know, I had a lot of responses from young people saying the show comes on too late, and that's why we moved the show, taking an hour away. But as I say, whenever you make that kind of programming changes, you step into a landmine.
But you step into a landmine, but you also get there's a certain amount of good things that come from the change. For instance, I happen to know that in the fundraiser, there's a reflection of, like, you have a tremendous response of youth, people from their early mid-teens on.
Some of the great responses to Divine Forces was that, you know, I was told before I came on board, Divine Forces never made money because it's young people. And then in the last fund drive, it was Divine Forces with its young people and their $25 pledges that brought in $10,000 in, I think, less than 2 hours. So that was amazing. That was amazing to see that kind of support. And that was also part of supporting the decision to move them to an earlier time slot that worked better for them.
Now, when you say that you go out and consult with communities, now I know you didn't go out and consult with all them deadheads out there.
Oh, you've been bad.
but the basic thing is that what I wanted to ask you about that is that, you know, you can't possibly, you know, go out and consult with every community. But there is something that you and I have talked about a little bit about this thing of how do you produce these structures? How do you get these structures that actually can influence programming, where actually people's voices can be heard to influence a program, to determine the kind of program, to give you input?
Let me also say, when I walked in here, that the lab had completed a community needs assessment that was done that gives you at least a bird's eye view of how people perceive the station, what they wanted on the air, etc. So that helped. And then coming in and looking at the mission and say, how do we fulfill this mission through doing different things, by diversifying the air, by creating training programs, by putting youth on the air, etc. Michael, I'm sorry, I got lost there.
Well, I want to know how you determine these? How can you build these structures?
How to build structures? I think part of it is the program council that the lab is now putting in place. The collectives has done some incredible work. There's a lot of complaints against Radio Intifada that they're anti-Semitic, but Radio Intifada came out of a collective. There's a lot of collectives now. There's an African collective. There's an African American collective. There's a youth collective, and through those structures that was put in place before I came in. It was something actually Stephen started, which was great because that's the kind of structures I had put up in South Africa as well, is to have those collectives, and they go out to their communities and their constituencies and get input from them and create the kind of programming and address the kind of issues because they're close to the community. That, I think, are one of the most powerful structures we can create at KPFK, including the program council, and having structures within the station where people feel they have a level of participation. They can come forward and they can put forward their ideas, proposals, whatever. And even if we don't agree with it, they can still discuss it. They can still debate it. So I think, you know, those kind of structures need to exist inside and outside of the station to get the voice of the community.
Now, one thing about this program council, because I know people who are deeply involved in all the ins and outs of Pacifica know what a program council is. But there's probably some people who are just driving home tonight who have no idea what a program council is.
Well, the program council, the way it's going to be constituted now is to have listener activists or representation of listener activists, paid and unpaid staff, and the lab on there that operates as in a advisory capacity where, you know, proposals, we get hundreds of program proposals, and one thing you would do is forward those proposals to the program council, and they would make recommendations to the program director and the GM. These are the kind of things we think. To also do analysis about each program of the station, to see how does every program on the air fit or don't fit the mission of Pacifica. What do you think we need to do with every show to improve the show, to create, you know, more inclusivity? I specifically think that KPFK is too one-sided sometimes. I think that we shouldn't be scared to address opposing views. Even though we take a stand for something, we take a stand for the anti-war movement, but we shouldn't be scared to bring on somebody that stands for the war so that we can challenge them and bring out the truth.
challenge them or tear them apart.
Well, I was being nice, yeah.
No room for being nice.
But I, you know, I think that the program council at the end of the day can play a very important role, because they need to reach out to the community and get more input from the community, and then come forward and say, this is what we're getting from our communities. These are the type of programming. We need less health and spirituality, or more, you know, the news. We need new, more coverage from different areas, or whatever. You know, I specifically, personally want to see live drama and poetry and performers come into our studios and see that talent brought to the airwaves. So pretty much the program council play an advisory role to the program director and the GM, and it's made up of all the different constituencies or different groups.
Mm-hmm. And so that is the way that you would bring in all the impact of all these communities.
And it's a huge task. Right. It's a momentous task, but I think it's a very important and crucial structure to have for the station.
One sort of informational question I have around collectives is, what, you know, can anyone just form a collective? That's something that's just my personal thing. I'm just wondering, can anyone come
collectives
in
collectives have been formed on two levels. One, programmers have their own collectives for their specific programs, like the Gay and Lesbian Collective. And then community groups have started collectives, such as the Latino Collective, forgive me because I know they changed that name, or Youth Collective. So different groups would come closer and then approach the station and start a collective. Okay. So, yeah, it's pretty much community groups or people coming together from different communities and say, this is what we want to do.
Okay. Now, one thing I do want to, there's a couple of things I really want to get into before this all goes. And one of the things that I want to say is, you know, you talked about the language, and I think that's a really important area. And because, not just because it's sort of, you know, it's not like there's this sort of moral standard, we have to do this or we have to do that. You know, it's true that you said, you know, people have been robbed of their language and their ability to speak. You also have, if you're talking about a radio station that's actually trying to service the entire community, you've got a large part of the community that does speak Spanish, mm-hmm. primarily. You know, you've got, you know, how do you see doing this? And this relates to the other question, which I'll repeat, you know, once you talk about your ideas around the language programming, is that there's also a task that you have, which is Pacifica, KPFK in particular, has had a very specific audience, you know, for years. It's had it's been a little bit broader. I know it's not all one way or the other, but it's had an audience that's been a lot, you know, frankly, a lot middle class, you know, better off, progressive, large, you know, large, not all, but large amount of white people in it, you know, and you have, you know, this section of the audience here, and then you have this whole thing that you're talking about reaching out to, this whole grouping of people, and you need to talk a little bit about how do you bridge that, because, you know, some people would say, just, well, slough off the people we had. Let's go for the other people, you know. But
That's the big challenge. That's one of the biggest challenges, I think. And the idea is not to exclude the community or the, you know, middle class, mostly white listeners that has supported the station financially and otherwise for so many years. You don't want to push them away. But I think that we need to create time on the program schedule to bring in Spanish language programming during daytime, to do interlingual programming, you know, maybe not just Spanish, but other languages. We have a huge African community here. We have a huge Asian community, a huge Filipino community. And so, you know, at some point there needs to be a decision as to how many languages do we want to broadcast. I know when I talk to people, a lot of people will talk about, you know, the Spanish language public affairs show on Saturdays and say, we'd like to know what they're talking about. And so that's where the issue of interlingual programming comes in, so that you cross the bridge and build relationships or understanding between cultures by having an interlingual program. And people can call in and speak in both languages, whether it's two or three languages.
Okay, we'll come back to this in just a second, but we're going to take a quick break right now.
Yo, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more Michael Slate.
Hello, I'm Don Bastani, host of Middle East in Focus. On Wednesday of this week, all KPFK programming will focus on poverty. That's the condition that keeps our brothers and sisters from having enough food to eat and to feed their children, prevents them from clothing their kids properly, and denies them a decent place to live. But the poverty here, and in the United States in general, is a result of complex socioeconomic factors, while the poverty in occupied Palestine is created by Israeli political policies and actions which have been supported unconditionally by us. Wednesday afternoon, we'll show you facts and details about the occupied Palestinians that you had no idea existed. Tomorrow afternoon at 2.
Join American Muslims who are taking a bold stance for freedom and security at the Muslim Public Affairs Council annual convention taking place on December 21st and 22nd at the Long Beach Convention Center. A few of the scheduled guests include Dr. Jamal Badawi, Dr. Suleiman Yang, Art Torres, Ramona Ripston, and Democracy Now!'s very own Amy Goodman. Topics to be discussed include the American Muslim identity, threats to American democracy, freedoms, and civil liberties, and global and national security. KPFK is a co-sponsor of this special two-day event that takes place on December 21st to the 22nd at the Long Beach Convention Center. For more information, call 213-383-3443.
You're listening to My Dog, Michael Slate on KPFK. Check it out.
Okay, welcome back. I'm Michael Slate, and today we're talking with Eva Georgia, the general manager of KPFK. And we're going to continue the discussion, but we want to take a couple of phone calls in the time that we have left. The number is 818-985-5735. Eva kind of wants to hear from people about what their thoughts on this. So call and let us know.
And even their suggestions.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, while we're waiting for calls, and again, the number is 818-985-5735. While we're waiting for a call, maybe we could just start hitting on some of the stuff that I wanted to actually pursue, which is, one of the things you've done with the station is it's really gone from being just sort of this objective thing to being a, you know, an activist station, a station that's actually taken a strong stand around the war. And I'm noticing that we do have a call, so we will let's talk to Albert first. Albert, welcome to the show.
I wanted to know worst case scenario, because a lot of the programming that you broadcast in Pacifica are considered subversive. Worst case scenario, let's say the government of this country crack down on you guys, what are you going to do? It's like, you know, it's not so far-fetched because there is previous history of radio stations being shut down because of their radical point of view.
I think that's a good, you know what, I just actually addressed this question this morning and I said that Pacifica needs to come up with a plan of action about what they do with us taking such a strong stand against the war. Pacifica needs to be ready to deal with the government clamoring all over us, because you know they're listening. You know they'll do anything to silence his voice, and I think that that's probably a question that the network needs to be prepared for, legally and otherwise.
And you know the other thing, actually, it is actually at this station right here. It's not you know something that's a stranger to this station. This station was actually raided by the police back in the 70s. You know, there's a long history of Pacifica undergoing stuff like this. Now, I would just like to add one thing to that, which is, the other thing is that people just like you, Albert, need to be out there. And if something happens, if there's some kind of clampdown on the station, people need to make their voices heard. They need to be out in the streets to stop that, to come to the protection of the station. If you value this resource, you need to protect it.
It's the same thing, you know, when the police took over, like close to 100 police, men and women took over Radio Atlantis because of me attacking them. The community stood up for it,
right, exactly.
And I kept broadcasting.
Exactly. All right, let's take Kofi. Kofi, how are you?
Well, hello.
Hello.
Hi.
This is to Eva Georgia. You know, for quite a while now, there's really been no African-American based programs with a hard edge. You know, I remember previously we used to have Continent to Continent.
With Ron Wilkins?
Yeah, with Ron Wilkins. You know, now when, you know, the changes were taking place, Ron Wilkins, was presented And, you know, the impression was that, you know, if everything got resolved, you know, his program was going to come back on. We are still waiting. You know, it's almost, you know, close to, you know, a year now and nothing is happening. I mean, of course, you know, there are a few African-American-based programs, but, you know, they are all milquetoast sort of programs.
Okay.
Without an
edge. Kofi, we were trying to get a lot of calls, so can you kind of real quick just sum up what your question is?
I think I got his question, what's happening with Ron Wilkins, and when will he be back on the air?
Okay.
When I came in, that was one of the things I promised. In fact, I'm meeting with Ron Wilkins right after the show, and I have promised to bring him back on the air. But there's also a couple of things that we need to address. We are going to address the issue of anti-Semitic accusations against Ron Wilkins and other programmers. So we're getting ready to do some roundtable discussions in early January. I'm hoping... and I'm going out on Olympia. I'm hoping that Ron Wilkins would be available in January to come on the air. I am not promising that, but that's what we're working towards.
Okay, that's something people can look forward to. Okay, so why don't we talk to RB. RB, welcome to the show.
Hey. Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Yes, I wanted to address that issue about the black programming family tree, Ron Wilkins, kind of the continent. But the main thing I wanted to address, I'm in San Diego a lot. And we used to be able to get it in San Diego. Now we can't get it in San Diego. As you approach San Diego from Orange County, there's another program that comes on with classical music. What is the problem with that?
Oh, you're talking about the Mexican station that's interfering?
Right.
At this stage, I've had negotiations with both the GM at KUSC and the GM of XLNC that broadcasts from Mexico. And right now, the latest is that the FCC has pretty much said to KUSC in a conversation with our attorneys last week that they will not grant KUSC a license to broadcast on a station that's broadcasting illegally on KPFK. So it looks like we are moving forward. We have requested that XLNC, the Mexican station, either lower their power or apply for another frequency. Right now, there's negotiations going on with the authority in Mexico. So as soon as I know more, I would, you know, I think it's important that I also keep the listeners updated more about this problem.
Okay, exactly.
We are very aware of the problem you're having in San Diego. And on that note, I want to say thank you to everybody that participated in supporting the Transmitter Project. We got hundreds of letters that we submitted to the FCC about interference in our signal area.
Okay, now let's move on to Robert. Robert, welcome to the show.
Hi, Robert.
Robert? Okay, let's try and get...
Hello?
Hi.
Yeah, this is not Robert.
Okay, who's this?
Yeah, this is Ahmed. You know, I would like to know why Ian Masters is no longer, you know, in the program.
Okay, sure. Ian Masters is on the program. He's on Sundays at 11 o'clock. And this is what I want to say. I did move some programmers, including the rebroadcast of Radio Nation as well as the rebroadcast of Ian Masters. I put Ian Masters back to his original slot on Sunday. And I want to say that I don't believe that programs should automatically be rebroadcasted because there's so many voices that's not being heard. So that's that's the answer to that.
Okay.
He is on Sundays.
Okay, why don't we try Mark. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Eva. Mark.
I think you're doing a great job at the station. I've got two things here. One is you could try broadcasting in English on the right-hand channel and Spanish on the left-hand channel. Just experimentally for some shows and see how that works out, see how many people can receive either language that way.
You know, that's a great idea, and I will talk to our engineers and technical team about that and see what we can come up with.
Yes.
And I also think it's great to do some things just as a trial period.
Yeah, and the other thing is this. You were attacked in South Africa because you were broadcasting information about corruption and crime. And so you came here, and now you're trying to broadcast information about the biggest corruption and crime in the world, the administration that's in the White House, the situation in 911 where they allowed it to happen. Michael, you had a very good program on with Mike Rupert about that. And so, since about 1994, when the National Board was hijacked, in order to shut down the broadcasting of true information from the various stations, since about, you know, for the last 8 years or so, KPFK, I guess maybe except for Democracy Now, pretty much, maybe one or two other programs, has been pretty much a CIA government plutocracy, oligarchy, well, elite mouthpiece.
Okay, I appreciate your comments. We have to start wrapping up, though. We have less than a minute.
You're changing that, and
okay,
you're going to.
And it's great. It's great that you're listening.
Back.
Great, man. Great.
He's saying we're changing that perspective from being CIA.
Right, exactly.
I don't know what it was previously, but definitely.
The point is that we're moving this station on. We're moving this station on to be part of the people, to be part of the people's movement. I personally think you're doing a great job. I want to thank Armando Godinho, the producer, Maggie LaPeak, the board operator, and Eva. I want to thank you a lot for coming on and for the job that you're doing.
Thank you so much. And listeners can always reach me at GM@KPFK. I am quite open to your criticisms and your comments and suggestions to move the station forward. Thank you so much.
Okay. Just below the stairs.